When 19-year-old Margot gives birth to her son Bodhi, she stares into his tiny face and thinks, "I am so fucked." This raw confession sets the tone for Ruphy Thorpe's unflinching novel about motherhood, sex work, and survival in contemporary America. Published in 2024, Margot's Got Money Troubles quickly became a book talk sensation, praised for its honest portrayal of young motherhood and sex work without judgment. Celebrities like Reese Witherspoon and Emma Roberts have championed the book for its authentic voice and cultural relevance in an era when platforms like OnlyFans have redefined the boundaries between intimacy, commerce, and empowerment. What makes this novel particularly striking is how it refuses to moralize about Margot's choices, instead presenting a complex portrait of a young woman navigating impossible circumstances with the tools available to her. Margot's journey begins in a junior college literature class taught by Professor Mark, who immediately recognizes her raw talent for writing. Their initial interactions follow a familiar academic pattern: thoughtful feedback on essays, encouraging comments during class discussions, and additional reading recommendations. Mark's mentorship seems genuine at first, offering Margot the intellectual validation she craves, yet subtle signs of his ulterior motives emerge in his lingering office hours conversations and increasingly personal compliments. Their relationship crosses professional boundaries with a gradual but deliberate progression. Mark's approach is calculated, sharing intimate details about his marriage troubles, suggesting private meetings to discuss her work, and positioning himself as a misunderstood artist who uniquely understands her potential. Despite being married with three children, he pursues Margot with an intensity masked as literary passion, writing her poetry filled with thinly veiled romantic metaphors and making dramatic confessions about his past relationships and infidelities. The power dynamic between them remains complex and contradictory. While Mark holds institutional authority as her professor, he repeatedly insists that Margot possesses the true power in their relationship, a manipulation tactic that simultaneously flatters her while absolving himself of responsibility. Their sexual relationship unfolds over several weeks of clandestine meetings in his office and local motels, with Mark alternating between passionate declarations of love and paranoid concerns about discovery. When Margot discovers her pregnancy, Mark's carefully constructed persona crumbles. His immediate, almost reflexive assumption that she'll have an abortion reveals his true priorities. Rather than offering support or discussing options, he becomes increasingly agitated at her reluctance to immediately agree to termination. His behavior shifts dramatically, from loving mentor to someone primarily concerned with protecting his career and marriage. Though Margot eventually acknowledges that terminating the pregnancy is likely her best option, the way Mark forces this decision through emotional manipulation leaves lasting psychological scars. After a deceptively tender farewell meeting, he vanishes completely for 3 days before ending their relationship via a coldly worded email, framing his abandonment as concern for her future, a final act of paternalistic control. The relationship serves as a masterclass in how mentorship can transform into exploitation, especially within academia's inherent power imbalances. Mark's behavior follows a recognizable pattern: identifying a talented but vulnerable student, establishing emotional intimacy through intellectual connection, and gradually shifting boundaries until inappropriate behavior seems natural. What distinguishes Thorpe's portrayal is its resistance to simple victim narratives. Margot maintains agency throughout, acknowledging her role in the affair while recognizing its fundamental impropriety. Her reaction, feeling more annoyed than exploited by Mark's ultimately childish behavior, adds nuanced complexity to a situation often oversimplified in contemporary discourse. Despite scheduling an abortion, Margot ultimately decides to keep her baby, drawn to motherhood for reasons she can't fully articulate, a mix of instinct, hope, and an inexplicable emotional pull that overrides her practical concerns. This decision immediately places her in an economic vice grip that will be painfully familiar to many parents, especially in a country where the average cost of raising a child exceeds $230,000. The novel brilliantly illustrates how American society makes single motherhood nearly impossible without significant resources or support systems, particularly in urban areas where living costs continue to spiral upward. Margot's childcare struggles become a nightmare of cascading failures that illustrate the precarious nature of informal care arrangements. Her mother, Cheyenne, refuses to babysit after one attempt, claiming Bodie doesn't like her, though the underlying tension seems to stem from Cheyenne's own unresolved issues with motherhood. A neighbor reports that Bodie cried for 7 hours straight under another sitter's care, leaving Margot torn between work obligations and maternal anxiety. A professional from care.com appears to have never fed him, highlighting the dangers of trusting strangers with childcare despite their credentials. When Margot's roommates ban babysitters from the apartment, citing noise and liability concerns, she begs Cheyenne for one last favor, but her mother calls mid-shift, threatening to abandon Bodie at the restaurant where Margot works, demonstrating how unreliable family support can be for many single parents. The restaurant owner, Tessa, surprisingly steps in to care for Bodie herself, revealing a momentary glimpse of community support. But afterward delivers an ultimatum that reflects broader workplace realities: find proper childcare or be fired. When Margot fails to secure affordable childcare that accommodates her night shifts, a common challenge given that most daycare centers operate only during traditional business hours, Tessa fires her via text after nearly 2 years of employment, demonstrating how quickly even seemingly stable jobs can disappear. The next morning, her roommates announce they're moving out with minimal notice, leaving Margot facing a $2,000 monthly rent shortfall in a market where average daycare costs already exceed most single parents' rent payments. This sequence perfectly captures the economic trap many single parents face. Without childcare, you can't work. Without work, you can't afford childcare. The system seems deliberately designed to fail those most vulnerable, particularly young mothers without family support or financial resources. The novel shows how this cycle perpetuates itself, each setback making recovery harder, each solution creating new problems. What makes this portrayal so powerful is its matter-of-fact presentation. These aren't extraordinary circumstances, but the everyday reality for millions of Americans trying to raise children while earning a living wage. The story particularly resonates in a country where childcare costs have increased by 41% during the pandemic, while wages remain stagnant and social support systems continue to erode. The novel explores fatherhood through three distinct male figures: Mark, who initially rejects his child; Jinx, Margot's own father, who was largely absent during her childhood; and eventually Mark again, who makes a surprising return to Bodie's life. Mark's initial abandonment of his responsibilities follows a predictable pattern, but his later attempt to gain custody reveals something more complex about modern fatherhood. When he suddenly files for full custody, it's not because he's had a change of heart about wanting to be a father, but because his wife Sarah insists he take responsibility after learning about the affair. His pursuit of custody becomes less about his relationship with Bodie and more about managing his failing marriage and public image. Jinx, Margot's father, represents a different kind of paternal figure. A former professional wrestler with addiction issues, he unexpectedly moves in with Margot after getting divorced and completing rehab. Despite his flaws, Jinx demonstrates genuine care for both Margot and Bodie. He cleans the apartment obsessively, prepares homemade meals, and stays up all night with Bodie when both mother and child fall ill. His wrestling background becomes surprisingly relevant when Margot begins her OnlyFans career, as he offers insights about building a persona and creating heat through controversy. Yet Jinx's addiction issues complicate this redemptive arc. When Margot discovers him unconscious in the bathtub with a needle in his arm, she must confront the reality that his presence, while supportive in many ways, could jeopardize her custody of Bodie. This forces her to make difficult choices about loyalty, forgiveness, and self-protection. The novel's exploration of fatherhood avoids easy judgments, instead showing how men navigate or fail to navigate their responsibilities within systems that often don't prepare them for parenthood. The contrast between Mark's privileged abdication of responsibility and Jinx's flawed but genuine attempts at connection highlights how class and circumstance shape parental relationships. Margot's entry into OnlyFans work forms the novel's central narrative arc, offering a nuanced portrait of digital sex work that avoids both moralistic judgment and naive celebration. After learning about the platform from a conversation with her father about a wrestler named Arabella who makes more money on OnlyFans than from wrestling, Margot creates her own account, Hungry Ghost. The choice of username itself reflects her complex relationship with consumption and visibility, themes that echo throughout her journey on the platform. Her initial approach is surprisingly creative. Rather than posting explicit content, she offers to rate subscribers' penises by comparing them to Pokemon characters. This unique niche brings her initial success, combining humor with sexuality in a way that sets her apart from other creators. She develops elaborate rating systems, complete with detailed explanations and custom graphics, turning what could be crude interactions into playful entertainment. Though she later struggles with subscribers' expectations for more explicit material, this early innovation demonstrates her determination to maintain creative control over her content. The novel details the business aspects of OnlyFans with remarkable specificity, revealing the platform's complexity as a digital marketplace. Margot learns to navigate subscription tiers, timing posts for maximum engagement, and managing cross-promotion on other social media platforms. She discovers that success requires not just content creation, but sophisticated marketing strategies, from crafting the perfect bio to understanding peak posting times across different time zones. The financial aspects are equally intricate. Processing fees, payout thresholds, and the delicate balance of pricing content to maximize both subscriptions and tips. What makes Thorpe's portrayal of digital sex work particularly compelling is how it acknowledges both the empowerment and vulnerability it creates. Margot experiences genuine pride in her work and appreciates the financial independence it provides, allowing her to pay off debts and secure stable housing for the first time in years. Yet she also faces significant challenges: judgment from family members who discover her account, potential custody issues with her children, and the constant pressure from subscribers to push her content beyond her comfort zone. The novel explores how digital sex work, while offering more safety and autonomy than traditional forms, still carries social stigma and professional risks. The psychological dimensions of online sex work were deeply explored through Margot's relationship with JB, a subscriber who pays her primarily for emotional intimacy rather than explicit content. Their evolving connection, built through late-night conversations about childhood memories, personal fears, and future dreams, challenges conventional assumptions about sex work relationships. Through their interactions, the novel examines the blurred lines between authentic connection and transactional intimacy, raising complex questions about the nature of digital relationships and emotional labor. By presenting sex work as neither inherently exploitative nor simply empowering, the novel offers a rare, nuanced perspective on a topic often reduced to simplistic moral positions. Margot's experience shows how digital platforms have transformed sex work, creating new opportunities for autonomy while also introducing new forms of vulnerability. The platform's digital nature means both liberation, working from home, setting one's own boundaries, and new pressures, including the constant need to maintain an online presence and navigate parasocial relationships with subscribers who feel entitled to access to her life beyond the screen. The relationship between Margot and her mother Cheyenne forms one of the novel's most emotionally complex threads. Their dynamic reverses traditional mother-daughter roles, with Margot often showing more maturity and stability than her impulsive, emotionally volatile mother. Cheyenne initially pushes Margot to get an abortion, insisting she won't help raise the baby. When Margot decides to keep Bodhi, Cheyenne expresses disappointment, having believed her daughter was destined for college and a career. This creates a fundamental tension between them. Cheyenne sees Margot's pregnancy as repeating her own mistakes, while Margot can't understand what opportunities everyone keeps insisting she'd be giving up. Their relationship takes a dramatic turn when Cheyenne discovers Margot's OnlyFans work. During a shopping trip for Cheyenne's wedding dress, Margot reveals her new career. Cheyenne is devastated, hissing, "I didn't raise you to be a whore," and declaring, "No man will marry you now." The irony, which Margot recognizes, is that Cheyenne's own advice about using beauty as currency had inadvertently prepared her for this work. The ultimate betrayal comes when Cheyenne reveals that her new husband, Kenny, called Child Protective Services on Margot. Though Cheyenne tries to justify it as teaching her a lesson, this crosses a line for Margot, who cuts ties with her mother. This moment crystallizes how Cheyenne's need for male approval consistently trumps her loyalty to her daughter. What makes this portrayal of motherhood so powerful is its refusal to idealize the maternal bond. Cheyenne loves Margot, but is fundamentally self-centered, unable to put her daughter's needs above her own desires and insecurities. Yet the novel also shows moments of genuine connection between them, such as when Cheyenne slaps a nurse who makes fun of Margot's choice to name her baby Bodhi, a moment Margot treasures as feeling most loved by her mother. When Mark unexpectedly files for custody of Bodhi, Margot is thrust into a legal system that seems designed to favor wealth and conventional lifestyles over actual parenting ability. The novel offers a scathing critique of how custody battles often become proxies for moral judgments about parents' lifestyles, rather than assessments of their children's well-being. During mediation, Mark cites three concerns about Margot: her financial situation, her living with her violent father, and her sex work. He argues that her OnlyFans career will negatively impact her life prospects, claiming she'll only attract lower-caliber men and expose Bodhi to inappropriate influences. The hypocrisy becomes evident when he expresses concern about proper boundaries, prompting Margot to point out the inconsistency in his argument about protecting Bodhi from her body when the baby breastfeeds daily. The legal battle intensifies when Kenny, Cheyenne's new husband, reports Margot to Child Protective Services. This introduces another layer of scrutiny, with CPS worker Maribel demanding a hair follicle drug test after Jinx tests positive for opiates due to his methadone treatment. Following her lawyer's strategy, Margot refuses without a warrant and presents a meticulously prepared binder containing case law about cam girls, her psychological evaluation, and a letter citing Maribel's illegal threats. What's remarkable about this storyline is how it illustrates the way legal systems often penalize unconventional families while overlooking actual parenting quality. The psychological evaluation confirms Margot is fit, noting her high-care, low-control approach is optimal, and Bodhi appears healthy and well-adjusted. Yet she must fight harder for her parental rights simply because she doesn't fit the profile of what society considers a good mother. The resolution comes not through a dramatic courtroom victory, but through Margot's strategic use of legal knowledge and her willingness to stand up to intimidation. When Maribel reads the letter mentioning potential legal action, she quickly backpedals, effectively closing the case. This outcome suggests that systems often back down when confronted by those they assumed wouldn't know their rights, a small victory against institutional power. Throughout her struggles, Margot discovers support and friendship from unexpected sources, creating a chosen family that sustains her when biological ties fail. This community building becomes one of the novel's most hopeful threads, suggesting that meaningful connections can form even in seemingly unlikely circumstances. Tessa, the restaurant owner who initially seems crude with her penis-shaped baby shower cake, later shows surprising compassion by caring for Bodhi herself when Margot's childcare falls through. Though she ultimately fires Margot, this moment of kindness reveals the complex ways people can support each other even within professional relationships. Margot forms an unlikely business partnership with OnlyFans creators Casey and Rose. Despite their different backgrounds, they collaborate on TikTok videos featuring Margot as a mysterious alien girl called Hungry Ghost. When their videos go viral after a famous YouTuber creates a reaction video, they experience success together. Though tensions arise when Casey takes mushrooms before a scheduled shoot and Rose criticizes Margot's scripts, their partnership represents how women and sex work often support each other in an industry that can be isolating. Even Susie, Margot's initially peripheral roommate, becomes an important ally. She helps Margot understand gaming and anime culture to better connect with her target audience, and later asks to be officially included as part of the team. Their friendship develops organically through shared experiences and mutual support, creating a connection that transcends their different backgrounds. Perhaps most surprising is Margot's evolving relationship with JB, which transforms from a transactional arrangement to a genuine connection. Though their romantic relationship falters due to Margot's deception about her identity, they eventually form a business partnership that honors their mutual respect and complementary skills. JB's proposal to start a consulting company for OnlyFans creators represents a way for Margot to leverage her experience while creating something more sustainable. These relationships illustrate how community can form around shared vulnerability rather than shared circumstances. Each person in Margot's life brings different strengths and perspectives, creating a support network that helps her navigate motherhood, work, and personal growth. The novel concludes with Margot finding an unexpected path forward that honors both her responsibilities as a mother and her desire for creative fulfillment and financial independence. After briefly considering a conventional career in real estate, staring at her pink binder full of plans and realizing she hates the entire idea, Margot embraces an entrepreneurial opportunity that builds on her OnlyFans experience. JB's business proposition to start Ghost Inc., a consulting company for OnlyFans creators that combines his machine learning expertise with her content creation skills, represents a perfect synthesis of their talents. Their plan to analyze target demographics, offer persona critiques, and write scripts allows Margot to use her creative abilities while building something more sustainable than direct content creation. This resolution avoids both the moralistic redemption arc that would have Margot abandoning sex work entirely and the potentially exploitative path of increasingly explicit content. Instead, it offers a third way, leveraging her experience to help others while creating boundaries that work for her as a mother. When JB worries they might essentially be becoming pimps, Margot enthusiastically embraces being the most awesome, ethical, kick-ass pimps of all time, reclaiming language often used to shame sex work-adjacent businesses. What makes this ending particularly satisfying is how it rejects conventional narratives about success and redemption. Margot doesn't need to be saved from sex work, nor does she need to double down on it at the expense of her boundaries. Instead, she finds a path that acknowledges the complexity of her situation and creates space for both professional fulfillment and personal integrity. The final image, JB presenting Margot with a Ziploc bag full of Runtz candy he personally collected from mall machines, captures the novel's blend of pragmatism and tenderness. Their handshake as business partners, both sensing this is just the beginning of our story together, suggests that meaningful connections can form even in unconventional circumstances, and that success might look different than we initially imagined. At its heart, Margot's Got Money Troubles is about the fundamental human desire to be truly seen and accepted. Throughout the novel, characters struggle with the gap between their public personas and private selves, searching for connections that bridge this divide. Margot's work on OnlyFans represents the most literal version of this theme. She literally performs for an audience, creating a character that both is and isn't herself. Her relationship with JB becomes complicated precisely because it blurs the line between performance and authenticity. When he asks what's real and what's not in their relationship, he articulates the central question many digital relationships face. Even Jinx, with his wrestling background, understands this dynamic. He explains to Margot how wrestling involves a real-fake thing, where performers use their bodies to entertain crowds while maintaining a character or kayfabe. This becomes a metaphor for how we all navigate between authenticity and performance in our daily lives. The novel's final insight that art is fundamentally one person trying to get another person they have never met to fall in love with them captures this universal desire for connection across distance and difference. Whether through literature, performance, or digital interaction, we all seek to be recognized in our complexity, to have others see beyond our surfaces to something essential within. What makes Thorpe's novel so powerful is how it refuses easy judgments about authenticity and performance. Instead, it suggests that all relationships involve elements of both. We perform versions of ourselves while seeking real connection. We create personas while hoping to be truly seen. In Margot's journey from college student to mother to content creator to entrepreneur, we see someone learning to navigate these tensions with increasing skill and self-awareness, finding ways to be seen that honor both her needs and her boundaries.